Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to Ace time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Going to face Christian Walker here. And Walker sends one high and deep to left center field. All the way back and gone. Number 21 on the year breaks the tie in the bottom of the eighth. Christian Walker, his second home run of the day.
Shooter.
That is a called third strike. Ball game over. Astros take 2 out of 3 from Colorado. And their lead in the AL West improves to 2 games as we head towards Labor Day weekend.
You know, he's got good stuff. He's got a good heater. He ended up backfooting me on a slider that last at bat. But, I just told myself to be ready for a fastball early, maybe get him up off the bottom to not to chase that slider below. But, you know, a lot of these relievers, it's a lot about just trusting yourself, trusting what you see, and letting it fly. So, you know, I think I'm a better hitter the less I think in the box. So just trying to embrace that a little bit.
Did I talk to Michael?
Micah.
About, I'm sorry, I didn't get to.
Okay, I want to in the audio bumping into the show. Welcome in everybody on a Friday, a football Friday for sure, with some baseball sprinkled in as well, as you can tell. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. Congrats to the Astros on the win yesterday. I wanted to make sure that we got at least a little bit of Jerry Jones in the open, because we're going to attack the Micah Parsons trade in the next segment. We've got a little more room. I think it's worthy of a little more time and space than what we have in the open here, so we'll hit the Astros off the top. Let a few more people get into their cars so they can listen to the reaction here to the huge trade yesterday. Micah Parsons going to Green Bay. And, man, the press conference, Jerry Jones, 11 straight minutes of talking. 11 straight. They asked one question.
That's exactly what you want.
He was off to the races yesterday.
Honestly, everything, his chosen strategy of just preferring to create commotion over getting business done and just holding on to the last moment. It's the worst possible thing for the Cowboys as a franchise. It's the best possible thing for anybody that creates or doesn't even create content. Just rolls it out and lets it go. He's so good at creating attention and a stir while simultaneously destroying his team.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Thanks, Jerry.
He doesn't think he's destroying his team. He thinks this is the right move to win now, he said.
Well, as he and some other Cowboys fans will tell you, in their constant need to go back 30 years in time, they'll remind you of the Herschel Walker trade.
Correct.
They'll say,
that was a good trade.
Like, using the early 90s as justification for any and everything is exactly why you guys have been so perennially disappointed.
Correct. Yes. So we'll dig into that in the next segment for sure. That was huge news yesterday. That was the big talk, Seth. I was at the Texans season premiere last night.
Yeah.
The kickoff for the season, where you get a player sitting at each table and
rubbing elbows with the rich and famous.
We had Titus at our table last night.
Right.
Yeah. And Titus Howard at our table, which was great.
Did he eat with his hands?
He was, dude, I will tell you.
I want all these guys to be like cavemen on the offensive line.
He did not. He was with his wife. So if he was with the other offensive lineman, maybe, like when in Rome, but he was, his wife was there. She was very, very nice. Chelsea. Their fourth kid is due during the football season this year. Titus is about to have 4 kids under the age of 4 in his house. He's already got 3.
Only you could afford some help, like a nanny or something.
Titus, I think he's doing fine. Titus drinking water the whole time. You know, we've talked about Titus.
See, I want my offensive linemen slugging back domestic beer.
No,
eating
not
ribs
during
with
the,
their hands he, and slugging back domestic beer, Sean.
We talked about how Titus looked better conditioned this year, and at least at the Texans gala last night, or the
That's
Texans season premiere, he was walking the walk, man.
That's true. Sometimes my dream of the perfect offensive line is you go back to like the 80s. When it was just these guys that were just scrappy cavemen that would, they were beer drinkers and everything. But you also have to remember that they were shoveling handfuls of Diana ball into their mouth at the same time.
Yeah,
so it's if this day and age, you gotta be a little bit more dialed in. That's true. Good point.
It's different. Now, you know who was drinking quite a bit at the table? Me.
Yeah.
I was. Yeah. I was making up for Titus's lack of alcohol consumption. I did ask him, I'm like, hey, when something like this Micah trade goes down, what's the offensive lineman group text like? And he's like, dude, it was – and he said himself, like, they were all like, man, this is crazy. Like, Micah Parsons getting traded. good to see him stay in the NFC. That's me saying that.
That was
not
my
Titus
thought
Allen.
Too. Yeah. He's like, all right, cool. As long as and now in Titus, or excuse me, Micah. There's a little bit of the same dynamic with how it was with here with J.J. Watt. Mm-hmm. When man, you can be one of the very best defensive players in the league, but unlike a quarterback. Usually the really best quarterbacks, at worst, they'll be average in a yeah. year. Every now and then there's a dip, but usually they're at least an average offense.
Yeah.
Where with Micah last year, they were horrendous defense. So there yeah. is there's a part where I want to partially stick up for Jerry and say, well, yeah, well, if we trusted you to actually operate the team properly after this, there's something to be said for, man, you need more than one stud defensive player to have a good defense.
They overall, but historically, since Mike has been there, though, there's been a drastic difference between them with him on the field and him
right.
off the field. You know?
Right, but the last year, over the course of 4 years, yes, they're an yeah. awful defense without him, and they're a much better defense with him.
Yeah.
But last year, they were one of the worst defenses in the league,
yeah.
just regardless.
Yeah.
So it's... There's, you know, it's not like one defensive player is a straw that stirs the drink.
Oh,
they would have been even worse without him, don't
yeah,
get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we'll play some audio from Jerry and show you what he thinks about the trade yesterday. We'll do that in the next segment. Astros win yesterday. Jason Alexander didn't get the win in this one. He was all right. It's the Rockies, so that they're duking it out here in the eighth inning, and you need a Christian Walker home run to get out of there with a series win over the Rockies. It's whatever to me. I don't care how they're doing it at this point. I'm just glad they're still ahead of the Seattle Mariners, who were idle yesterday, so they picked up a half game. So the Astros came into this series with a two-game lead, and they leave the series with a two-game lead.
Yeah. All right.
So they didn't pick up any ground.
I know every single time you talk about this series, people understandably and justifiably point out that, yeah, hey, by the way, guys, it's the Rockies. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care.
For one. Two, the fact that you saw the difference with Yordan in there and how much he affects everybody else. Mm-hmm. I mean, Yordan barely got pitched to, and you saw, okay, versus better teams, how that's going to be good. But then last night, I was just happy to see, okay, good, scrappy defensive plays. And meanwhile, the Rockies are an inferior team. Let's see them be idiots in the field and yeah. overthrow bases and whatnot. Meanwhile, Cesar Salazar is jumping out there. Like, talk about throwbacks to the 80s. Man, a beautiful RBI bunt.
Yeah, a little bunt.
Made Cam Smith with a throw to home and a
yep.
tag at home that was
yep.
gorgeous. Cesar Salazar had that other throw to third. Like, there was some good, scrappy play out there.
Were you as confused as I was when Chaz McCormick, it got called that he was hit by a pitch?
Yeah.
And then, so there's runners on base already. I'm like, okay, Chaz, take your base. And they challenged it, and it got overturned so that Chaz could stay at home plate and hit. And it ended up working because he got a little blooper to right field.
Yeah.
I was so confused. I'm like, no, Chaz is not a hitter. If it was Yordan, I would challenge it because I want Yordan to swing the bat. I don't need Yordan getting, you know, first base conceded to him with guys on base. I want Yordan to swing and maybe hit a bomb.
Right.
I'm going, why are we... What are we doing here?
Well, I think the big guy, yeah, I guess the you start calculating the chances of, then you've got an
yeah, you start, calc-
out,
you start yeah, calculating the chances of Chaz
and,
getting on base.
Well, I know. I don't know. I'll just trust the nerds. I can't fight the nerds all the time, Sean.
Yeah.
I just know that by and large, they're usually probably correct.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go for it.
Okay. All right.
I gotta sacrifice bunt in this game.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, yeah. My old school small ball need is,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was just very confused. It was, I'm like, okay, we're treating Chaz like he's Yordan. Cool.
Hey, the Rockies announcer, I have to give him credit because I was watching the highlights this morning. And we've all grown tired of the Jason Alexander puns, the Seinfeld puns and whatnot.
Yeah.
He did call it the Summer of Jason. And
seen that joke already?
Have you seen that already?
Yes,
I hadn't caught it already.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. No, I've
okay,
seen people
right,
make.
I
haven't seen. I haven't seen him. I've seen people make that joke.
I take
already.
Back my grudging acknowledgement of it, except that it was an opposing announcer. So if
okay.
it's an opposing announcer who's just not doing the basic,
yeah.
it's kind of like when somebody makes a joke about the being everybody else being a better than everybody else scandal. There's like six jokes that people tell over
yeah.
and over again. That if somebody comes up with something creative, I tip my cap to them.
Right, right, right. No, I live on social media more than you do, so I've seen
all the
every single Costanza joke. There's not a single one out there I'm going to give anybody credit for. So Christian Walker's the other story in this game. Two bombs. Feels like that's starting to work out the way the Astros drew it up on the chalkboard, Seth, with Christian Walker. Last 37 games, I think you put this stat in the rundown. Walker has an 860 OPS. That's best among Astros hitters with at least 10 at-bats. So there's
since the All-Star break.
Since the All-Star break, yeah. With at least, I'm wondering, there's somebody with like four at-bats who went like 3-for-4 probably. But he's got 9 home runs. So that feels good. Of everything that's gone wrong for the Astros this year, Christian Walker was one of them for the longest, and at least you got that. I thought it was cool just the other night when Yordan hit the home run, seeing Yordan and Carlos Correa dap each other up at home plate. I'm like, oh, this is the first time we've like seen these two together, you know? I'm like, oh, that's right. They're on the same team now again. This is cool. Yeah. So, because they did not play a lot of baseball together. The year that Yordan came up and won Rookie of the Year was the year that Carlos missed a ton of time with his massage therapist broken rib. Then Yordan missed all but 8 at-bats of the COVID season, and then they played together in 2021. Like the Carlos Correa and Yordan Alvarez have not played in the same lineup a ton in their careers. Really only one full season.
I don't know, Sean. I don't know. I still 100% don't quite understand what the Mandela effect is, but I feel like I've got memories of Carlos Correa and Yordan Alvarez doing all kinds of things together, and you're lying to me now. I think you're trying to... they're wearing Fruit of the Loom logos the entire time.
Okay. It's...
That's what I'm going to do this afternoon. I'm going to sit down and actually try to understand what the Mandela effect is.
I've never heard of it before, so...
You've never heard of it?
No. Are you surprised?
You're on social media so much more than me. I've never seen that.
No.
It's basically when there's like something in the everybody. This is how everybody's going to correct me. When something's in the people's collective consciousness that everybody just feels like, oh yeah, that's the way it was, but it turns out it actually wasn't.
Okay.
And I think the Fruit of the Loom logo is one. There's one that I think everybody thinks that there was a cornucopia on the Fruit of the Loom logo, but there actually wasn't, or something along that line.
What is this named after? The Mandela effect.
I would guess Nelson Mandela.
I don't know.
So there must have been something about Nelson Mandela collectively believe.
I was expecting something about Nelson Mandela in your answer. Yeah.
I only vaguely know from just kind of seeing stuff and not really understanding it what it is. Yeah.
Okay. Texters, let us know.
No. Okay. Yeah. Great.
Read it.
They already are.
Yeah. 713-572-4610. There's your number. All right, off and running on a Friday. Astros win yesterday. That's good news. All right, this Micah Parsons trade. There are a ton of angles to this thing. We're going to talk at 8:20 to one of our colleagues up on 105.3 The Fan at 8:20 today. Zach Walchuk is one of their afternoon hosts on 105.3 The Fan. We'll get the Dallas. I'm interested to get the Dallas view on this trade because I saw a lot of Dallas people kind of treating it like the Laremy Tunsil trade. There was a lot of like, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out from Dallas people on this thing. We'll give our reaction to it and some Texans angles I think that are significant with this Micah Parsons trade. We'll do that coming up next. All right, let's dig into this Micah Parsons trade. If you've got thoughts on it, 713-572-4610. So let's establish this right off of the bat, because most of the time when a team is trading a player like Micah Parsons for draft picks, the Cowboys, for those who haven't seen the details of the trade, the Cowboys yesterday afternoon sent Micah Parsons to the Green Bay Packers in exchange for 2 first-round picks and Kenny Clark, who is a defensive lineman. He's kind of a run-stopping defensive lineman. The Packers, in turn, give Micah Parsons the biggest contract ever for a non-quarterback. This offseason has been the offseason of non-quarterbacks jumping and leapfrogging each other. You had Max Crosby and then Myles Garrett puts a $4 million gap between him and Max Crosby, and then Ja'Marr Chase. T.J. Watt, I think, was it until I think he was getting 41 and something. Whatever. It's by like $6 million per year. Micah Parsons is now the highest paid non-quarterback at $47 million a year. But let's establish this right out of the chute. This is not a situation where this is a team, the Cowboys, it's a bad team that feels like we're going into rebuild mode. Jerry Jones was selling yesterday that they feel they can take whatever money it was they were going to give to Micah Parsons and we can spend this better and use these draft picks and be a better team without Micah Parsons.
Decided that it was in the best interest of our team to take the consideration that we have. We appreciate his 4 years. Well, we can take that consideration and we can win in our minds more than had we gone the other route and signed. That's not a negative on Micah. That's just unique to our circumstances.
Okay.
Yeah. Except that he also, remember, was claiming that he had already given him more money than or offered him more money than anybody else had ever made and whatnot. Yeah. So it's not like there's a problem with Jerry. It's one of these things that makes sense in general if you were to say that and take that. But he was perfectly willing to pay Micah Parsons a whole bunch of money. He turned it into a drama. He made it about him. He made it about inviting more speculation and soap opera type elements to the Cowboys, which is what he wants to do. And just like he does with every single one of these high profile contracts, he just kicks it down the road and kicks it down the road and kicks it down the road. And you could have had your cake and eaten it too, Jerry. If you'd done this deal last offseason, you could have made him the highest paid, non-quarterback or highest paid defensive end and still been in a better off situation by far. But you just wanted to kick it down the road, and now you're going to try to dress it up like you're playing four-dimensional chess.
Yeah.
It's just, it's by his own words, he just loves stirring things up and getting attention and publicity. And there's nothing about this deal that makes it look like, oh no, this is the smart and rational and conservative thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You could have made this trade before the draft and actually used these draft picks or what have you.
Yep.
But now you get a couple of likely late first round picks over the next couple of years, and good luck with that.
Yeah, I think that's worth noting. Yeah, these are like the two first round picks. If the Packers are who they've been under Matt LaFleur, these are going to be picks that are in the high 20s somewhere. They are generally a team that's still hanging around when there's at least eight teams left in the playoffs. The Packers are usually still there. The interesting thing about this one, Seth, to me, is yes, he's kicked the can down the road before with Dak Prescott, with CeeDee Lamb most recently. This one felt like it was personal with David Mulugeta for some reason. Mm-hmm. And like this felt like Jerry Jones turned this into a Jerry Jones versus David Mulugeta. Like, yeah, Micah and I had a handshake deal and we pressed some flesh and we agreed I was going to make him the highest paid, highest guaranteed guy. And then once Micah said, okay, now talk to my agent to get the contract done, Jerry glitched out on the whole thing. Like
the sheer idiocy of everything Jerry was saying over the last couple months was just astounding.
Yes.
And that's after hearing a whole bunch of idiocy out of Jerry Jones before. Because Jerry Jones would stand in front of a microphone and in various interviews act like the standard thing was to make a deal with the player and not talk to the agent.
Mm-hmm.
And he was acting almost, he was befuddled as to why this agent was trying to get involved.
Right.
As opposed to, no, that's the way it typically goes.
Yeah.
And some of these jackass, idiot, boot-licking media types actually bought it because they're so stupid. I've never been more disappointed with these stupid sports media types than when they allow Jerry to get up there and say things like that. And I'm like, oh, interesting. Oh, yeah, it is weird that Mulugeta is trying to insert himself almost used the C word again.
You
idiots. It's unbelievable how stupid you allow yourselves to be.
Do you have any specific names you want to put out there? Or are you just talking in general to Dallas media?
I didn't watch the entire Stephen A. Smith. Did he push back? You watched the entire Stephen A. Smith interview.
I actually didn't watch the entire Stephen A. Smith.
There was like 3 minutes of it that I didn't watch. So I need to go back and watch to be sure. Sure.
Yeah.
If he didn't push back on the notion of the agent not being involved, he'll be on that list of guys that like, what are you even doing? How are you not asking that question?
I would think pushback from Stephen A. Smith on that would have surfaced on social at some point, but I didn't see it myself.
So I will do that. I'll put that on my list of things to do after the show, Sean.
Okay. The Lord's
my virtual
work.
Assistant.
The Lord's work, yes. So Micah Parsons leaves Dallas. 4-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All-Pro, Defensive Rookie of the Year. I guess he hasn't won Defensive Player of the Year. I thought he had, but it may be a Mandela effect right there. Right, Seth? Is that an example of it? Like the thing
no,
that
Mandela
Micah
effect
has
to be that there's like a huge chunk of people that remember something. They're like, nope, that's the way it was.
Okay.
I remember it to this day.
Okay.
And despite it pretty objectively being false.
Okay, I have a mini Mandela effect going on with Micah Parsons and the Defensive Player of the Year award. Apparently he hasn't won one. 52.5 sacks, 9 forced fumbles, 4 fumble recoveries. And you pointed this out in the open, and we'll hit it again here. This is worth noting. Historically, over the course of his 4 years, Micah Parsons has been the harbinger for the Cowboys, the barometer between good and bad defense. Him being on the field, this is from Bill Barnwell. Over the last 4 years, the Cowboys were the league's best defense with Micah Parsons on the field by EPA per play, estimated points, expected points added per play. It's a efficiency metric. They were the best across over 1,000 snaps. Those same Cowboys immediately became the worst defense by that same metric when Parsons was on the sideline. Barnwell, however, also points out, as did Seth Payne, in 2024, the Cowboys were 29th in EPA per play and points allowed per possession as a defense with anybody on the field. They were just bad last year. So that's got to be the rationale we heard from Jerry Jones coming into this. Okay, there's two possibilities. One is he's just carnival barking to suit whatever the latest narrative is. That's a distinct possibility. Or he's taking a look at this stuff and going, all right, instead of spending $40-plus million on one guy, which he was, again, ready to do a few months ago, but now, instead of doing it, it can better be served by spreading it out over several plays. This is a little – Texter's point this out. Sorry, Seth. This is a little bit what Bill O'Brien was saying when he traded DeAndre Hopkins.
No, exactly, 100%. And that's the problem with things like this, is that if you isolate the quote, yes, it does make sense. But you have to look at the sum total of what somebody does.
Yeah.
O'Brien, I could make an argument for any one of O'Brien's egregiously bad moves that, you know, even the DeAndre Hopkins trading away, the Patriots did it with Chandler Jones. They traded Chandler Jones away for hardly anything. He had more obvious and publicly reported issues off the field or whatever, but it was kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
They felt like Chandler Jones, the defensive end, didn't quite fit their culture. They traded him away for a lot less than he was probably worth.
Yeah.
But it's the Patriots. They get a pass, and it's a one-off. With O'Brien, it was just deal after deal after deal where you had to contort yourself a little bit to make an explanation for it.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with the Cowboys. You find yourself perpetually contorting yourself almost to the point where your internal organs are all useless and bruised and battered. And that's what the Cowboys are. So all of these, and then I still see like people going back and justifying this by, well, you know, they did it with the Herschel Walker trade.
Yeah.
You idiots.
Yeah.
This is what happened. A bunch of people watched a Netflix documentary that was obviously very skewed in favor of Jerry Jones, and now are thinking they've been bamboozled.
Yeah.
They're like, oh yeah, that's right. This is all part of the grand plan.
Yeah,
they haven't been to a conference championship in 30 years, and you've got people still like doing what Jerry Jones wants them to do.
Yep.
Justifying everything he does by pointing back to something that happened over three decades ago.
I'm really anxious to get the Dallas view on this at 8:20 today with Zach Walchuk, who's the afternoon host on our sister station up there. I was listening in on them yesterday, and it felt the parts that I was listening to, there was a lot of talk about Micah in the building, and Micah's a little off, and he's not the guy you want as the face of the franchise, that type of stuff, which are things that we had heard over the last couple of years. There were reports out there the last couple of years that almost felt like they were bracing Cowboy fans for this moment, to the point where there was not an overwhelming sentiment that this is a horrible trade from the Dallas side of things. It was very much split. If I can make a comparison, and again, we'll confirm this when we talk to Zach Walchuk in a couple of hours, it seemed like universally the Luka Doncic trade, I mean, they were protesting outside the stadium. They thought that was going to be the death blow to that franchise, the Luka Doncic trade. Turns out they luck into Cooper Flagg. That's a whole separate thing. The reaction to the Micah Parsons trade, who has been, you know, I don't want to say as meaningful to the Cowboys as Luka was. It's a different sport, and Luka's one of the top 5 or 10 players in the sport. I suppose Micah's going to wind up one of the top 5 or 10 when the NFL top 100 comes out. He's like in the 30s. Anyways, it was very split, is what I'm saying. It was very split
Dallas. That part of it, though, I think speaks back to, okay, this is what we were hearing 2 years ago with Micah.
Yeah.
And it's Jerry kicking the can down the road. And if it was the right thing to trade him for various reasons or how people felt about him in the building or what have you, why did it take 2 years to do it and why did it draw out this long?
Yeah.
And it's simply because, you know, like everything Jerry is saying about how they could use these picks to be a better team. Yeah, you could have used them 2 years ago.
Yep.
You know, you've squandered some really good rosters in that time.
Yes.
And you love the drama. You can't help it. You just love the potential for getting all of these clicks and all of these eyeballs.
Okay. So here's my question for Texan fans and for the Texans in general. Will Anderson Jr. is not Micah Parsons inside the building. Will Anderson Jr. is advertised by the GM and the head coach as the guy that is the tone setter in that building for everybody, especially on the defensive side of the ball. D'Amico Ryans, unprompted, points to Will Anderson multiple times as follow that guy. So it's the narrative, not even a narrative, the truth around Will is he is that sort of guy, and he's ascending to be that sort of player too. Like if he has the leap in year two to year three that I think he's going to have, I think he's already in the conversation for defensive player of the year, but he's going to be that type of player. He's getting to that. Is he going to get – what's he going to get, 50?
I know. I told you during the break, man, I bet Caserio throughout this ordeal was really wishing that the CBA allowed him to extend Will Anderson right now.
Yeah.
Because this is where Nick has doled out some big contracts, but they're very early in the – the Nico Collins and the Derek Stingley ones, where a lot of times those things drag on into August or what have you. He just gets on it right away.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is partly because they know that the price is always going to go up.
Yeah.
And that also he's known for a couple years now that, all right, we got what we wanted in Will Anderson and CJ Stroud. We got to make some room for those guys and also pay guys like Derek Stingley.
Yeah.
He would have loved to have given Will Anderson a contract.
Well,
sometime 3 months ago, probably foreseeing some kind of numbers like this.
Any team that has a non-quarterback, especially an edge rusher or a wide receiver, because those seem to be the two positions that are really pushing the limits right now. Those are the only two other positions that are over $40 million a year right now. Mm-hmm. Is edge rusher and wide receiver. If you have one that's on that ascent to where they're in this sort of conversation we're having with Will Anderson, yesterday was a bad day for you. Watching the highest paid non-quarterback go from $41 million to $47 million, watching it go from the mid-30s to $47 million in one offseason is crazy.
Sean, David Mulligetta is – how do I phrase this? I don't want to try to make it bulletin board material because I genuinely mean this.
Oh, no,
I don't have the same concerns about David Mulligetta that other people do.
Yeah.
And it's that because the Texans have already demonstrated an ability to work with David Mulligetta on multiple fronts.
He's Stingley's agent.
Yeah.
He's Stingley's agent.
Now, they extended Deshaun Watson already with David Mulligetta as his agent. Now, that ended up, as we know, turning ridiculously south, except they also worked with Mulligetta to get Deshaun Watson traded.
Yes.
And that was a long and painful ordeal in which they had to kind of work in conjunction with Mulligetta to create that environment, that auction type environment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that Nick and Mulligetta are kind of, they're strange bedfellows in a regard in that they both see the value of getting a deal done early.
Yeah.
And then let the rest of the league deal with the repercussions. So that it doesn't mean they're allies or anything, but I think their goals are aligned somewhat.
Yeah.
And I think they understand each other. So I think they're gonna be jaw dropping numbers, but I think deals are gonna get done with CJ Stroud and Will Anderson.
Yeah,
CJ Stroud is the one you're concerned about.
Yeah. Will Mulligetta is not Will's agent, but yeah, he is CJ's agent. So that is absolutely something worth watching. All right, hey, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Headlines coming up next. We've got Astros that we'll dig into in headlines. We'll circle back to this Micah Parsons trade. Got a whole lot to get to here on a Friday. Stay there.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Going to face Christian Walker here. And Walker sends one high and deep to left center field. All the way back and gone. Number 21 on the year breaks the tie in the bottom of the eighth. Walker, his second home run of the day.
Shooter.
That is a called third strike. Ball game over. Astros take 2-3 from Colorado. And their lead in the AL West improves to 2 games as we head towards Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, and it's 2 games that remained at 2 games. The Mariners idle last night. The Astros win 4-3. The two highlights you heard there, these are two of the guys that are kind of keeping the Astros' head above water right here as they work towards August and September of getting everybody back. Christian Walker's been excellent since the All-Star break, and 860 OPS in the 37 games he's played in. And, man, give credit to Brian Abreu. He has really he has filled that Josh Hader role every bit as good as Josh Hader was filling the Josh Hader role before Hader got hurt with that shoulder injury. Brian Abreu has been excellent as the closer for this team. He was excellent as a setup guy for most of the season, and he's been really good since being called upon to take over the ninth inning for this team. So he closes things down last night for the Astros.
I'll tell you what, the Jason Alexander dynamic is, you know, as a rough comparison, a lot of differences, obviously, but I mean, it feels a lot to me like the Charlie Morton dynamic of 2017. As this veteran guy that, if 2 years ago somebody told you that Jason Alexander was going to be, you know, that some 30-year-old out there was going to have a huge part of a potential playoff run, you know, like, what the hell are you talking about? But so far, that's what it's been. And he's been one of your rocks here as you try to just fight out of whatever funk you were in. And as Jordan's coming back, I'm allowing myself to be less dead inside. I'd kind of gotten to a spot with the Astros where I was in that bad place of like, man, I don't know. See where we're getting it. But now I'm allowing myself to dream a little bit.
It's kind of wild that you feel that way, and I'm with you on that. Like, they're 2 games up in the division. You know, that's the crazy part. Is that thankfully the Mariners have been able to kind of, you know, keep the Astros where they are right now.
You still have, I mean, Abreu is a closer. That wasn't like a huge leap to think, oh, you know, that somehow Abreu was going to be really good in the closing role, obviously, for every reason that you just cited. But the return of Luis Garcia, we've been burned a couple times so far already on guys coming back off the IL. You know, we haven't seen the best version of Christian Javier at all. Arrigetti might be rounding back into form. But the Luis Garcia return still looms.
Yeah.
And as I had said before, if you got two of those three guys, you know, and as viable, close to the best version of themselves, it's a completely different squad in a lot of ways.
Yes. Yeah.
So if Arrigetti, who knows about Christian Javier? There's still time. Arrigetti maybe is getting back to that. And then who knows what we see with Luis Garcia?
Well, and we should mention Lance McCullers in all this, too. Lance McCullers, according to Joe Espada yesterday, is going to work out of the bullpen in the short term. He could be available Monday. This series with the Angels is a Friday through Monday deal. They play the Angels on Labor Day, so it's a 4-game series going from Friday to Monday, and then the Yankees come to town after that. So he could start on Monday, but the team is not committed to starting him on Monday. And the big thing, available out of the bullpen. Seth, this is my question.
Yes.
How do you think the conversation went with Lance McCullers when Joe Espada broke the news that you will be working out of the bullpen over the weekend here?
I think it's a little bit like when maybe you try to float anything that maybe, like, say something to your girlfriend that you think that she might not be into, but you just kind of float it out there. Like, you know, like the old Nelly lyric, you know, I'm just kidding, like Jason, unless you're going to do it. I think they did that with Lance. You're like, hey, you know, boy, you know, screw you. You know, something funny, Lance, I saw something the other day. it was, you know, not to do a long-term thing or anything, but, you know, maybe Lance should come out of the bullpen.
So you think that they floated it to him to see how receptive he was to it?
I mean, he's never been receptive to it at all.
I know you're joking, yes.
He's just given it the hard and firm shutdown. So you're not going to try to say, hey, Lance, henceforth, you're a reliever. But maybe you say, like, you know, we almost look at like a rehab. You know, I think that's part of your rehab process, that we just start you off as
even though you started a game last week.
A little bit. Right, yeah. But all things are different. The circumstances have changed.
Yeah.
It's just short term.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not going to be long term.
Circumstances have changed. You threw 90 pitches in 4 innings the other day. Those are the circumstances that changed.
You're
not good.
You're already operating like a long reliever.
Yeah.
You're going 3 or 4 innings and throwing a bunch of let's just go ahead and just compress it a little bit.
So Lance McCullers will work out of the bullpen. We'll see how it plays out. All right, meanwhile, the big headline today across sports: Micah Parsons traded from the Dallas Cowboys to the Green Bay Packers yesterday afternoon, bombshell at 4 p.m. Micah Parsons on his way to Green Bay. The Cowboys get 2 first-round picks and Kenny Clark, who is a defensive lineman. Jerry Jones is selling this as a deal that the Cowboys, they needed to do this. They have a better chance of winning both in the short term and the long term. I mean, he was selling Kenny Clark at this press conference, Seth. He's like, he fills a need for us. We were not very good against the run last year.
I think you earlier had kind of framed it the way it feels like it has been with Jerry Jones. This is Jerry Jones versus David Mulligetta, the agent for Micah Parsons. Yeah. And I, no matter which way Jerry spins this as a win for the team, it's a win for David Mulligetta.
A huge
100%.
Win,
for all the smack that he talked and pretending like he didn't know David Mulligetta's name and all of that, I mean, which I might believe because he doesn't even know Micah Parsons' name half the time. That he called him Michael yesterday. He was corrected by his son. And
several times he called him Michael.
Yeah. So I think that, like, David Mulligetta wins this. If Jerry wanted to frame this as David Mulligetta versus Jerry Jones, Mulligetta won it resoundingly because his job is to get his client the best deal possible, and he ends up getting the best non-quarterback contract in NFL history.
This is the second time he's done something, David Mulligetta, where the other 31 GMs are like, throwing their pen, probably. Great. Like, crap.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. Well, and,
and thanks, Packers.
Exactly.
Thanks, shareholders.
Exactly. Well, yeah, let's not let the Packers off the hook. Brian Gutekunst, the GM up there, just made life a whole lot more difficult for teams. Like, we had a texter point out, Aiden Hutchinson, you know, we talk about Will Anderson in the previous segment. Yeah. Will's still got to play a whole season before he's eligible. Aiden Hutchinson is eligible right now for an extension, and we had a texter say he's going to get 50 probably. Yeah, who knows? Or will this be treated like the Deshaun Watson contract was, where it was this outlier for you know, the next several quarterbacks in terms of guaranteed money?
The whole thing about Jerry saying that, hey, which is true, you know, like, hey, you don't have to pay this contract so you can use these draft picks and use the cap space to create a better defense. That's all true in a vacuum. The thing that you can't account for is the fact that, yes, the Cowboys' defense was bad last year, but that's while teams were doing everything they could to minimize Micah Parsons. Yeah. So the issues, it's not like it was cap space or anything else that kept them from being a good defense. It was they had a prime circumstance where other guys, that's a classic situation where one of their other defensive ends could have gone off for 17 sacks or what have you because people were so heavily focused on Micah Parsons.
Do you like this move for the Packers?
I do. I think it's partly because the Packers they do things like this very, very rarely.
Yeah.
They've got one of the youngest teams in the league perennially. Yeah. So when you make a strategic move and do something like this, it's kind of a rhythm changer, but it's not what you're banking on year after year after year where it gets you in trouble. So I do like that. I like this move for the Packers.
Quick Texans note. Compared to a Micah Parsons trade, this is a pimple on the body of the NFL. CJ Gardner-Johnson got his number 8 jersey back yesterday, Seth. They announced the Texans announced some jersey number changes. We remember CJ Gardner-Johnson in his first press conference as a Texan basically warned John Metchie, who's no longer here. He's with the Eagles now. He said, "I'm coming for your number."
First of all, people don't call me CJ. Nah, I don't allow that. It's either CD or 8, which Metchie got to get that up. I'm sorry, Metchie. I'm sorry. I love you to death, bro, but God.
Okay, yes, so I have a funny little anecdote from last night, the Texans premiere. The Texans had their kickoff event last night, big charity event, whole lot of fun. So, Seth, we're sitting at our table. Titus Howard is sitting at our table. I was sitting next to Titus. The next table over was C.J. Gardner-Johnson's table, and I was watching him the whole time, and C.J. was holding court at this table. They were laughing. And so, but on his left hand was facing our table. And Erin Kapner, who is, I don't even know what Erin's title is. She does everything around here. She goes, "What is that ring on that guy's hand? What is that right there?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "That's his Super Bowl ring." She didn't know who he was. Yeah. And I said, "That's CJ Gardner-Johnson. He was on the Eagles last year. That's his suit." And it was gargantuan. And there's one point where everybody's getting up from the table, dinner's sort of over. And Titus makes eye contact with C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and C.J. just picks his hand up like this and just puts the ring next to his face, and he's smiling at Titus, like showing him the ring. It was so funny.
The funny thing about C.J. Gardner-Johnson and his, I mean, because he was obviously joking there, at least partly joking. He's worn jersey numbers 22, 23, 2, and 8 throughout his career.
Yeah.
It's not like he's been eight since childhood and that's all he was ever going to be.
He must like that one the best, I would guess.
Yeah, I think he likes that one the best. And so he gets it without any kind of drama. Didn't have to pay anything for it. He was wise. I think that's a sign of maturity. There are some players that would spend a king's ransom to get their jersey number.
Yeah.
Regardless of the... I did that myself with a player on the when I went to the Jaguars in what would have been my 11th career. I'd been 91 my entire career, and there was a player on the Jaguars at the time who was a training camp guy who was probably going to get cut, but I knew him and I liked him, so I kind of I gave him money to get my jersey number, and then he got cut like a week later.
You don't tell me the exact number. Was it a lot of money? Was it a little money?
By today's standards, it wasn't a lot, but it was I think it was five digits. Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't need
I liked him a lot. I don't want to say the guy's name right now, but yeah. What's that?
Apparently. Yeah, you did.
So CJ Gardner-Johnson gets his jersey number back. And I think it's a sign of maturity that he waited and bided his
time. Good job, CJ Gardner-Johnson.
He at least looked at the receiver depth chart and thought, okay, there's a chance.
He definitely didn't hawk his Super Bowl ring because it was on full display last night on his left hand. Yeah,
that's my idea. The Texans, because they're quickly gaining a reputation for being one of the most viciously hitting defense in the league, and I hope the offense starts to follow suit this year. Super Bowl brass knuckles. Nobody's ever done it before.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
make
yes.
it happen. Super Bowl brass
Super
knuckles.
Super Bowl brass knuckles. That's a phenomenal idea. I love
With
that.
With a switchblade that comes out the end of it,
too.
Okay,
well, that's a little extreme. All right, just the brass knuckles are fine. We don't need to stab anybody. All right,
Super Bowl platinum knuckles.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. Micah Parsons traded from the Cowboys to the Packers. What's been the effect in the odds-making community? What does the odds-making community think of the Packers? What do they think of the Cowboys? What do they think of Micah's chances of winning Defensive Player of the Year? We'll have that for you as we head into a nice long segment here in the 7 o'clock hour. Stay there.